Also known as modern-day slavery, human trafficking refers to the sexual exploitation of individuals through force, fraud, or coercion for the commercial benefit of traffickers. Sex trafficking remains the most commonly reported form of trafficking in Wisconsin. It's often described as hidden in plain sight, in part because our ideas about what sex trafficking looks like may not match with the realities, either of outside appearances or inside experiences. Thank you for tuning in this Monday morning on the Ideas Network stations here in Western Wisconsin. I'm Rich Kramer. This is the West Side. Three guests join me this hour to discuss sex trafficking in our region, what it looks like, its causes, and prevention, and the support services available for survivors. In no particular order, today's guests are Kat Jacoby. She joins us in the studio in Eau Claire. She is the Programs and Public Relations Coordinator for Fierce Freedom, a nonprofit advocacy organization in Eau Claire. Fierce Freedom works to educate the public and enact legislation to reduce human trafficking. Kat Jacoby, welcome to the West Side.
Thanks so much for having me, Rich.
It's good to have you on board with us. Joining us by phone in Madison is Jody Emerson. She represents the 91st State Assembly District in the Wisconsin State Legislature. Before her election in 2018, she was Director of Public Policy and Community Relations for Fierce Freedom and a member of Wisconsin's Anti-Human Trafficking Task Force. She has developed statewide programs and bipartisan legislation around human trafficking issues. Jody Emerson, thanks for being here.
My pleasure, Rich.
And joining us in our studio in Milwaukee, Nancy Yarbrough is with us as well. She is founder and executive director of Fresh Start Learning, a Milwaukee organization offering outreach and advocacy for domestic violence, human trafficking, and related concerns. Her areas of work include education and counseling. She has personal experience with human trafficking. Nancy Yarbrough, welcome to the West Side.
Thanks for having me, Rich.
Thank you. Listeners, we have a phone line open for you. What are your perceptions about sex trafficking, what it looks like, who's involved, and why? How do you feel when you hear reports of trafficking incidents in our region and around the state? Maybe you have a story to share about your own experiences or those of someone you know. You can give us a call at 1-800-228-5615. We've got wide open phone lines. That number again is 1-800-228-5615. So to start off, I wanted to get some personal background on the three guests joining us today. Nancy Yarbrough, I'll start with you. What is your personal connection to the work that you're doing right now to address sex trafficking?
Well, my personal experience is because at a young age, I was also lured into the grips of human trafficking by a person that I really thought had interest for me, an older guy that made it very appealing for me to get involved with sex trafficking. At that point, of course, we didn't call it that. It was a boyfriend-girlfriend relationship and making money and making ends meet as we could. I'm fully vested in this because now my son calls me the modern day Harriet Tubman. So I'm the person that goes back out to the streets where I used to be a victim. And now I'm a survivor, thriver, helping those to be able to come out and educate those that don't know the warning signs and what to watch for.
And how has your organization, you know, found its particular mission in addressing and working to end sex trafficking? I mean, it's broader than that, but with regards to this issue particularly.
Well, we make sure that we are looking at all aspects because, again, it's not cookie cutter, just like you just said. It's a different parallels that actually happen. So we look at it from the emotional standpoint, the physical abuse, how do you get your life back together. So I use myself as a model of what I needed, what happened with me, where were some of the gaps at, some of the service gaps were. And a lot of it was mainly being able to have a listening ear to understand and not put your objectives there where you don't understand. Listen and listen to the person that's actually telling you what happened. This was the lure. This was the pull. So we have legal counseling. We have healthcare initiatives. We have job readiness and placement, housing, all the things that's needed once you get to that point. But initially, we start off with just support groups and outreach on feet on the street, meeting people where they are.
Thank you for that. Jody Emerson, I want to go to you now. So, you know, what's your personal connection to this work? What drew you to it, and why are you such a strong advocate for trying to raise awareness?
Yeah, I think what drew me to the field of human trafficking or fighting human trafficking was just knowing that it was happening in my community and that no one was talking about it. You know, we've seen in the Eau Claire area how much the talk of homelessness and affordable housing has increased in recent months and years. But to think that the fastest growing crime was happening on a regular basis in my community to children, to young adults, and no one was talking about it, just really broke my heart, because when someone falls a victim to human trafficking, it really can put them on a path that can be just so devastating for years to come. And so no personal connection for me. No one in my family or close network had fallen victim to it. But I saw how quickly someone could fall victim to it. And so I thought, gosh, this could be my girls that this happened to. This could have been me that this happened to when I was younger. And we need to support our community. And so that was really what lit the fire under me with it.
And how much of that fire played into your interest in becoming a state lawmaker? I mean, are the two tied?
A little bit. I would say when I was with the advocacy group, I was pretty active in working on state policies and on legislation. Mm-hmm. You know, that was a piece of the job that I did back then. And saw how having really good public policy can change the path of our communities and our state. And so I thought, you know, there's a lot of other things that I'm interested in, too. So I really wanted to help other avenues as well. So I would say it was more about what I learned when I was at the advocacy group that really spurred my wanting to run for office. And I always said on the campaign trail that, you know, human trafficking legislation wasn't going to be a big part of what I wanted to tackle when mm-hmm. I got to Madison. However, our session starts in January, which is Human Trafficking Awareness Month. And so there's been a lot of legislation that's been proposed and talked about in the Capitol regarding human trafficking and a lot of different speaking engagements and things like that. So even though I said I wasn't going to do a lot with human trafficking, there still is a lot of work to do. And that has been a lot of what I've been tackling as we've gotten started this session.
Kat Jacoby, how about yourself? I mean, what brought you to Fierce Freedom? We know you at WPR in Eau Claire as a former intern.
Right, I was an intern here.
Yeah, so yep. So tell us about the path that brought you to Fierce Freedom.
Yeah, so for me, it was it all kind of started in college because I went to the University of Eau Claire here, and I think it was probably my junior year. I was able to see a campus film, Nefarious, which was all about human trafficking, kind of on a global, international scale, and I kind of as Nancy and Jody both said, it was like almost like a fire was lit in me, just this desire. This seeing of injustice and knowing that it was going on and wondering how I could join that fight. Mm-hmm. So I think that was kind of planted there a couple years back. And then I was looking into getting into nonprofits, and I didn't really know how that would be possible. I spent a year working on the East Coast, and then I came back kind of working in my field because my background is public relations. Mm-hmm. But I came back and I wanted to do something kind of meaningful, something that I was really proud to do. And I started volunteering for Fierce Freedom, actually. And it was really cool because I was actually able to see Jody at the Women's March speaking and really in her element. And that actually was really inspiring to me to see. And then after volunteering, I was able to come on full time. So it's really exciting.
So far, has it been rewarding work?
Very rewarding work. Yeah, very. As I'm sure that these two can attest, sometimes it is very, it can be emotionally draining, but you really have to take self-care seriously. But nothing has been more rewarding that I've done. So
thank you for that. 1-800-228-5615 is the number to call. We're talking about human trafficking in Western Wisconsin, also statewide. I mean, it's a national and a global issue as well. If you've got any questions or comments for our guests, give us a call, 1-800-228-5615. We're joined by Kat Jacoby of Fierce Freedom, Jody Emerson, a state representative for the 91st Assembly District, and Nancy Yarbrough, founder and executive director of Fresh Start Learning. 1-800-228-5615 is the number to call. I want to talk about a little bit about vocabulary and about definitions. So how do we even define human trafficking? Kat Jacoby, I'll start with you.
So human trafficking, as you kind of had mentioned earlier, is any time that force, fraud, or coercion is used for the purposes of subjection to commercial sex, so or anyone under the age of 18 that is being exploited for like basically, as you said, modern day slavery. Mm-hmm. So you have to look for those elements. And anytime that that is present, that is when human trafficking is going on. And as far as terminology, that's something that is really important that we want to we always want to shift perceptions, because I think that there's just this kind of idea that someone is just, you know, just a prostitute or something.
Right.
And so we always want to specify that actually when they're being trafficked, they are a victim. They're not making that choice. And if they're under the age of 18 legally, they are always being trafficked. And so the word child prostitute isn't even really in our vocabulary. We always say prostituted child or trafficked teen or trafficked youth or something like that. So,
Nancy Yarbrough, what have you found as far as, you know, misconceptions, whether it be through vocabulary or just about the whole issue, about human trafficking and about what happens to victims? What are some of the common misconceptions or myths that are out there?
Well, one of them you already brought up about it was their choice, or they made the choice to do so.
Mm-hmm.
I work with youth every Monday and every Thursday at two organizations that have young ladies there between the ages of 12 and 17 that the court systems have deemed trafficked because they did have an overseer or somebody that was actually engaging them in the act of something of value. Sometimes we think it's always money, but it's just a place to stay. Sometimes it's food. It's sometimes it's the love of the person they want to be around. The money part is the last element that some of the young ladies or the young men even think about, is being a involved with a crowd that accepts you for who you are. So sometimes it's misconceived as a boyfriend-girlfriend relationship when that person on the other end believes that that love in exchange for their time or in exchange for their heart, exchange for anything of value to them, meaning I just want to spend time with you. Mm-hmm. And sometimes people don't get the fact that it's not as easy to say no to that situation that it is to say yes to, especially if you have very much unresolved trauma, which seems to be the catalyst for most of the young ladies that I work with. Is always something that was unresolved in their childhood that led them to be able to say yes when they should have said no. The no is not always easy.
Right. Well, I think all of us know that in certain situations it's hard to say no, but with all those other, you know, circumstances that might be in a person's life, I can only imagine what complications that would add. Jody Emerson, you know, there's kind of playing off of what Nancy Yarbrough just said as far as the misconceptions about whether or not this is a choice or if it's a money-making venture. You know, I always see people talking about, well, you know, prostitution or selling sex is the oldest, you know, it's the oldest form of employment. It's one of the oldest jobs on earth. So is
right.
do you not accept that?
You know, I would say, and I get this question a lot, what about sex workers?
Mm-hmm.
And I would say that at some point, we as a society have failed someone for the most part if they're looking at selling their body in order to make money. We haven't given them the education that they deserve, the jobs available to them that they deserve, things like that. If they feel like selling their body is the only option that they've got for making money, for being able to make ends meet in this world today, we as a society have failed them. Mm. And a while ago, I did hear somebody say it's not the oldest vocation in the world, it's the oldest exploitation in the world.
Mm.
So, you know, one way or the other, somebody is using somebody. And that's just not acceptable. I think we've moved past that. We're not in the dark ages anymore. We have a world today where men, women, boys, and girls have opportunities, should have opportunities. And so people should be able to be whatever they want to be. And, you know, just to get on my feminist bandwagon for a second, if this was something that people were doing to make money and make a decent amount of money, guys would have done it a long time ago. So there is some exploitation involved in it if most of the sex workers are female. So.
That's an interesting point. And so then why is this, you know, why is sex trafficking also referred to, Jody Emerson, as modern day slavery? I mean, it seems pretty self-apparent, but can you kind of walk us through that?
Yeah, sure. So, I mean, it's really, it's a bondage. Now, it might not be the physical bonds, and I always cringe at some images. If you did a Google search for human trafficking, you're going to see somebody in, you know, ropes or chains or duct tape or something like that, and that's not what it looks like. It's invisible bonds. It's psychological bonds. It's, like Nancy was talking about, you know, the love that somebody feels like they're getting. You know, it's a very... it's not true love, but it's attention love. And so those are the bonds. Like, if I do this, then this person, if I don't do this, then this person will leave me. My boyfriend will leave me. I've lost my group of friends, things like that. So we really want to make sure that people understand their personal worth and are reaching towards that. That's an important piece in really preventing human trafficking, whether it's sex or labor trafficking.
Let's take our first break. We've got so much more to talk about. We've barely even scratched the surface. Today on the West Side, we're learning more about sex trafficking in Wisconsin, in western Wisconsin, and we're going to try to learn some efforts that we can all undertake to identify, address, and prevent exploitation and its related issues. Our guests today include Nancy Yarbrough of Fresh Start Learning in Milwaukee, State Representative Joni Emerson of the 91st Assembly District, and Kat Jacoby of Fierce Freedom in Eau Claire. We'll pick up the conversation when we return. We do have phone lines open for you to call in with your questions or your comments. The number is 1-800-228-5615. If you'd like to share a story, you can do so and remain anonymous. Just give us any first name, and we will love to have you and your story on the air. 1-800-228-5615. This is the West Side.
Support for WPR comes from Boardman Clark, a Wisconsin law firm dedicated to the art of listening and the power of informed discourse, serving businesses, individuals, and local governments throughout the state. BoardmanClark.com. Support also comes from Neff's Pianos in Eau Claire, offering a wide selection of grand and upright pianos. Jeremy and Nancy are dedicated to providing personalized service at their Water Street showroom. Information is at neffspianos.com.
Welcome back to the West Side. Western Wisconsin has experienced numerous tragedies in recent years, including natural disasters, homicide, kidnapping, and deaths by intoxicated driving. Next week, we'll consider how residents of our region respond to and process tragedy. That's next week. But today, we're learning more about sex trafficking in western Wisconsin. What does it look like? What is it like to be trafficked? What are legislators and advocacy groups doing to help local communities spot it and stop it? We're joined by Jody Emerson, State Representative for the 91st Assembly District, Kat Jacoby of Fierce Freedom in Eau Claire, and Nancy Yarbrough of Fresh Start Learning in Milwaukee. I'm Rich Kramer. You can join the conversation at 1-800-228-5615. Are you surprised to learn that sex trafficking happens so close to home? What about the role that the internet plays in facilitating trafficking? Is this something law enforcement and legislators should deal with or pay more attention to? Or do you see part of everyday community members and local businesses having roles to play as well? Share your questions and your comments with today's guests by calling 1-800-228-5615. So, Kat Jacoby, I'm going to go to you. Sex trafficking is often described as hidden in plain sight. So let's talk about hidden in plain sight in western Wisconsin, because it seems like, you know, to the uneducated person, it might seem like that is a big city problem.
Right.
A Milwaukee problem, a Chicago problem. Mm-hmm. Is that not the case?
Definitely not the case. Human trafficking has been reported in all 72 Wisconsin counties. So it's an urban problem, it's a rural problem, it's an everywhere problem. I think it just case by case does look different, you know, wherever you are.
Sure.
So that's something that we really work to do with Fierce Freedom. We go into all sorts of, we go around the state and educate. And so we'll go to, you know, smaller places like Cornell, Wisconsin, or even, you know, larger places like Milwaukee or because it does happen. It just looks different. So, but we've actually worked with, so last year we kind of expanded our programming to include victim support. And we had the opportunity, you know, victims just kind of came forward. Either they were connected with us through someone they were related to or someone they knew, or they kind of connected with us. And we actually worked with 27 victims in, you know, the span of basically 2018. And these victims, you know, came from all over the state. So they came from, as I said, like Cornell, which is a really small, you know, I was like driving through there and I was like, I can't believe how little this is, but it does happen there because as we've kind of talked about, it can be, it doesn't have to just be the exchange of money. It can be the exchange of drugs. It can be, it can just be, you know, a relationship that you, where you believe that you're being loved or they're giving you that love and acceptance that you crave. But it's really that you're really being trafficked. So it can really happen in so many different kind of situations.
That is surprising. Nancy Yarbrough, I want to talk, ask you, I mean, I've heard references to Milwaukee being some sort of a pimp college or some kind of a training ground for people that are looking to get into trafficking people in Western, in Wisconsin and across the nation. How true is that? I mean, is it that big of an issue in Milwaukee?
Well, it is. We used to have this thing called the Players Ball that was here in Milwaukee. So it was kind of like a pimp culture, especially down the Wisconsin Avenue area. There was a whole different dynamic of it. It seemed flashy, like the movies used to show with Superfly and all the guys that actually showed up with the red suits and the pimp hats and that kind of thing, which was a reality to some people. You wanted to be part of that famous type of, I'm with this person, I'm with this guy. So the guys that were the so-called pimps in the day had a reputation about themselves that they took care of their women, you know, very well. And just to kind of piggyback off of hidden in plain sight, the reason why in Milwaukee it is so hidden because you have so many pockets of poverty. And in a poverty state of mind, it seems normal. So what you're talking about trafficking, I call it under your feet. So you step on what people are saying because you know you have to provide for your children. You have to provide for yourself, your drug addiction. And then it's over people's head that's living in an affluent neighborhood because they figure that it could never happen to me. It could never happen to my children. And then we have pockets of faith-based organizations that believe because I'm raising my child right and they don't need anything, there could be not be a possible way that they can be lured in. So Milwaukee has all those hidden pockets of people that are either is beneath my feet because I have to do this to survive, it's over my head because I have everything and my children want for nothing, or it's hidden in those faith-based communities where you don't want to address those situations because you believe that could possibly happen. So it is hidden in plain sight in so many different areas and for so many different reasons.
Jody Emerson, why do you find that it's difficult for some people to talk about it? I mean, that's part of the hidden in plain sight, that people don't want to believe it's happening in their area. Why do we have that reaction?
Well, I think it's just easier for people to think, well, it's those people over there. Because if it's those people and whoever those people are, you know, it could be, well, it doesn't happen in smaller communities like I live in. It doesn't happen in Milwaukee. It only happens on the coast. Or, you know, I mean, everybody can point to some other area where they think it's going to happen. Because if we really examined what's going on, we'd have to admit that it's happening in our communities and under our watch. And, you know, human trafficking crosses so many different levels. It happens to young and old and men and women and poor and affluent and those who are employed and those who don't have any chemical addiction issues, those who do have chemical addiction issues. You know, traffickers are master manipulators, and everybody has some hole in their lives that needs to be filled. And those traffickers will figure out what that hole is, and they will work to manipulate someone to get them to fall victim to their schemes and so-called dreams. But everybody has a way that we could be manipulated, whether it's a 14-year-old who is on Facebook and just had a fight with their parents and says, oh my God, my parents are driving me crazy, I'd do anything to get out of my house, or whether maybe it's a single mom who's 26 years old and is worried about making ends meet and keeping a roof over her children's heads. Now, those two situations, how they would be exploited, are going to look very different. But a trafficker will figure out how to manipulate both of those situations to get what he or she wants.
And, you know, trauma was brought up. So in your experience in working with victims and through your advocacy work and all that you've learned, is that true that a lot of people tend to have some kind of a trauma, either physical or sexual abuse in their past?
I think that is the case, that something happened that makes somebody vulnerable to this. And that's why on the state level, we're really working on getting trauma-informed care in trainings into the schools, into the hospitals, into the jails and correction centers. You think about how many places people connect with other people. You know, there's so many opportunities for someone to intervene, whether it's when somebody is in that grooming process or once they've fallen victim. And, you know, but this isn't just a police issue. We can't arrest our way out of it. We need all hands on deck. We need everybody looking at it. And it was interesting, some of the discussions that have come up in Madison for me. I was talking to the Secretary of the Department of Ag, Trade and Consumer Protection, and he was saying, what can we do about this? Knowing that I've had some work in working with hotels to spot human trafficking, he's like, is there anything we can do on a programming, on a licensing level that's going to help with this? And so I think a lot of people down here are looking at what can I do in my sphere of influence to reach out to people, whether it's Department of Children and Families, whether it's Department of Public Instruction, whether it's the Secretary of Agriculture, saying, how can we fight human trafficking? And that change has been so refreshing and so wonderful. We've even got a bill right now, SB 25, that is looking at training truck drivers, people who hold commercial driver's licenses, as they are getting their training, that they need to have some amount of curriculum. And it doesn't have to be a whole lot. It can just be a small amount to understand what human trafficking is. Because if anybody who holds a commercial driver's license knows what human trafficking looks like, you know, we're talking bus drivers, we're talking over-the-road truck drivers, we're talking UPS drivers, you know, any of these people, that's a lot of eyes and ears that are out in our communities and across the country who could be spotting victims of human trafficking.
That is a lot of eyes on the ground. Very
right?
Interesting. And playing off of that, Nancy Yarbrough, you were quoted in a story that was put together by WPR reporter Danielle Kading, and this had to do with branding, and I thought that was horrifying. I did not know that this was a thing, but also it was really interesting in that tattoo shop workers and owners are getting some training on how to help spot this as well. So there's another layer of eyes on the ground. Can you talk to us a little bit about branding? I mean, what is it?
Well, you know what? It comes in different shapes and forms. It depends on how the young lady or the young man got pulled in or lured into sexual exploitation. Mm-hmm. If it was gang related, then it would be like the gang sign that they actually use to identify that they belong to this particular gang. And then you have what's called the jump in, you know, so the girls have to be able to produce the money that's needed to be a part of that family. So they always have this family connection. Then the boyfriend, girlfriend situation is get my name tatted on you so that people can know that you belong to me. So they have that. Then they have the high price dollar signs and the Louis Vuitton signs on them to say they're high price, high price prostitutes. It just depends on the nature of the community which they've got pulled into, what the tattoos are going to look like. I've never really seen the barcode where people use that all the time. Mm-hmm. It's more so in the nape of their back when they're dancing for in exchange for sexual exploitation of showing themselves there. It's in the massage parlors. It's in different places where sexual exploitation happened, but that branding is so unique to I own you property type. And we were told back in when I was out on the street that it was considered like a cattle, you know, how you knew the person who owned that particular cattle because all the branding was the same. And that's the same mindset that's involved in branding the young ladies. It's a sign of endearment for those that believe it's their boyfriend that's actually saying that now I honor you by putting my name, your name on my neck. Or I honor you by, you know, allowing people to know that I'm a part of this gang, you know, and they have my protection because they can see visibly that who I belong to. So people on the street that live the life understands the codes of the tattoos. People that don't see or understand, it just seems like, again, another part of hidden in plain sight. It wouldn't draw attention to anyone because everybody now is getting tattoos for various reasons. Mm-hmm. But those that are in the life recognize the tattoos for sure.
That is incredible. And so tell us a little bit about the work that's being done to try to educate people at tattoo parlors.
Well, what we're saying is that just to watch for if a person actually comes in, a young lady comes in, she looks underage, but she's with either a group of females and they're all getting the same tattoo. And the guy is actually telling the person that's initiating the tattoo what needs to happen. This girl has no ability to speak. She has no conversation. She looks there with no voice. Her eyes are toward the ground and she doesn't speak at all. Mm. You know, a lot of times that's what ends up happening. He goes in and he makes all the references of what it should be like. The girl goes in and she keeps her mouth closed and she just sits there and get it done. But now that they have tattoo artists and things like that that are doing it inside the home and know exactly how it's related, the more that we put information out, the more crafty that the trafficker gets, you know. So as long as we can let people know what to watch for, if it doesn't seem right, well, what does this constitute? What kind of sign is this? It's nothing on the board that you already have. It's something they brought in themselves, but you notice that it's on him too. You know, the tattoo is branded on him as well. You know, those kind of things. So the warning signs are there, the red flags are there, but if you're doing the things business as usual, it won't even seem unusual to see that happening. But that's what happens. They bring them in, they can't talk, they don't say anything, and that guy or that girl that's with them, because sometimes they don't even come, they send what's called the bottom girl with that person, so it doesn't have a red flag. She has it. I'm just gonna get my girlfriend a tattoo like I have, you know. So they're doing the most talking, and they're not being alarmed because these are two girlfriends that looks like they're getting tattoos to endear one another. But it's again, and girls are traffickers too, so we can't elude from that as well. There are female traffickers as well. So it's again, it's all hidden in plain sight. But the more that we educate, like it was alluded to before, having more eyes and more ears that are educated and can see things and can hear things and hear that conversation and then be able to be alerted by it, never become a superhero, always take down license plates and things of that nature and just kind of follow up with your local authorities saying, hey, this didn't seem right. I had a group of people come in and they got these tattoos and this was, you know, what I believe. And when we do that, let the people that are in place do the hard work, but we need to do the groundwork.
Can I just jump in and follow up with what Nancy said? I mean, absolutely. If you see something that you're worried about, safety first, you know, you don't want to be, like Nancy said, that superhero. And so when you do take a license plate or an address down or something like that, contacting your local law enforcement and saying, something just felt off about this situation, can you do a welfare check on this house? Because if you call up some 911 and say, there's a ring of human trafficking happening next to me, not all dispatch centers are trained in what that looks like. And so just saying, hey, can you do a welfare check on these people? Something didn't seem right is a big key that gets police out there in a non-combative way.
Kat Jacoby, you'd like to jump in too.
Yeah, I totally agree with what was just said. And as Nancy mentioned too, I think it's so good to talk about the level of coercion that's just going on with these victims. The fact that the family model is used. A lot of these victims are looking for that family. They're looking for that acceptance, and that is manipulated to the, you know, up to like the degree that it is used. And basically they'll use that manipulation of like, oh, you're in our family. And then they'll all get, you know, if like with the tattoo thing, that's what they're looking for is that acceptance. And then they'll, you know, a prostitute or a victim, as we say, a victim that does not have a pimp is actually called a renegade. So it's sort of this negative like connotation and terminology that's used. It's just like, oh, they don't have anybody. They don't have a family. They're just renegade. They're going rogue, you know? So, and they're almost like avoided or not treated as well within that sphere. So I just think that's also important. And also to just touch on a couple other warning signs that we like to talk about when we educate is even like As they said, things that do not match. So maybe somebody that, maybe a victim that comes into a hotel or something, and she is not dressed appropriately for the weather. So let's say it's as cold as it is right now, and she is going to be wearing she's very scantily clad, not wearing a lot of clothing. But maybe her hair looks really freshly done. Her nails look really freshly done. A lot of times, too, victims that have been coerced into this life will be, drugs will be used to kind of control them. So sometimes it's even their teeth are not going to be looking really great, too, like,
sure.
Because of maybe meth use or something like that. So I think that there's things that maybe you wouldn't necessarily think to look for. But as was mentioned, I think go with your gut and be persistent. I think that in the Midwest, especially, we're very like, oh, I don't want to, you know, step on anyone's toes or something. But you could potentially be saving somebody from this life.
And I understand that. But do you find that people are kind of playing off what you just said, nervous about, or do you think there is a danger of profiling? I mean, if you see someone that you think looks like this idea of someone that's being trafficked, I mean, couldn't, you know, is there a danger that
right.
you could be wrong?
Well, we never want to, we never want to fear monger or make the, you know, escalate the situation anyway.
Sure.
As Jody said, I think it's really important that you educate yourself and know really what it looks for, what it looks like. But as we say, you know, like call the non-emergency police number, call the human trafficking hotline, kind of just make the call and just see, you know, like, because I feel like there's a lot more to be risked if you didn't make the call, to be honest.
Sense.
That's what I would say, but.
That makes sense. Let's take our final break. We're talking about sex trafficking in Western Wisconsin, the state as a whole, and, you know, this nation of ours. Our guests for the rest of the hour, Nancy Yarbrough. She is founder and executive director of Fresh Start Learning. She joins us from our Milwaukee studio. With me in the Eau Claire studio, we have Kat Jacoby of Fierce Freedom in Eau Claire, Representative Jody Emerson of the 91st Assembly District of the Wisconsin State Legislature joins us by phone. I'm Rich Kramer. Stay tuned as we pick up our conversation on the West Side right after this.
There are more than two sides to every story.
Every day, the Ideas Network seeks out important voices in our community and brings you perspectives you won't hear anywhere else.
We don't just seek the truth, but understanding.
Be part of the conversation.
Explore different perspectives.
The Ideas Network, where Wisconsin connects.
Support for Wisconsin Public Radio comes from the Second Century Endowment Fund, a board-designated endowment fund providing ongoing financial support for WPR in its second century of service to the residents of Wisconsin. Support also comes from the Chippewa Valley Home Builders Association. The annual Home and Garden Show comes to the YMCA Indoor Sports Center February 22nd through the 24th. Ticket information is at cvhomebuilders.com.
It's difficult to look at recipes these days without finding one designed for an Instant Pot. Coming up next hour, Larry Mueller and guest Coco Morante will talk about what these electric pressure cookers do and how they may work for you. That's after 11 this morning on the Ideas Network. Welcome back to the West Side. I'm Rich Kramer. This hour, we're talking about sex trafficking and its related issues in Western Wisconsin and the state as a whole. Three guests are here with us today to talk about it. Representative Jody Emerson of the 91st District of the Wisconsin State Assembly, and Kat Jacoby of Fierce Freedom in Eau Claire. Nancy Yarbrough of Fresh Start Learning joins us from our studios in Milwaukee. 1-800-228-5615 is the number to call if you've got questions for our guests. What have we talked about this hour that surprised you, or what hasn't? As we wrap up the hour, what are your final thoughts on sex trafficking in Wisconsin? The number to call in is 1-800-228-5615. We have three open phone lines for you right now. 1-800-228-5615. Kat Jacoby, I wanted to kind of touch on, you know, one of the things that's come up a few times is drugs and how they play into this. So where do they fit into the picture? I mean, some recent news stories about sex trafficking in our region in Western Wisconsin, the old Clara County woman who was charged with trafficking children, for example, that involved drugs as an important factor. I want to be clear that that particular case was dismissed with prejudice, but it still suggests a relationship between sex trafficking and illegal drugs in
Definitely.
Western Wisconsin.
Yeah, and I think that case, if anything, at least shone the light on the fact that it is happening right here under our noses, and it's and it doesn't always look like the cookie cutter as we talked about. I think it's so important to talk about how drugs are related to this. A lot of the victims that we've worked with actually have come from the jail as well, like Chippewa County Jail, and I don't know if all of them have, but many of them were there for drug-related charges.
Sure.
I believe that it's that vulnerability. So whether they already were, you know, addicted to drugs or opiates or narcotics or anything, and then somebody came along to traffic them and use them and exploit them, or whether they entered into a relationship and then drugs were used to control them. It can look lots of different ways. I know in Madison there was a sentencing of a trafficker who received, I believe it was 20 years or something. He was trafficking two women that were known to have to be heroin addicts. So mm-hmm. he actually approached them because he knew that he could easily control them by using drugs.
Sure.
So that's a huge part of it. And so, again, it's looking beneath the surface. Like the victims we've worked with, one of them even said, she said, my family just thinks I'm a drug addict. She's like, but all this happened to me. You know, like I was also trafficked. Another victim we worked with from the jail, she was basically, she was actually initiated into a gang and she was actually used as sexual collateral in exchange for drugs. Like if they couldn't get the money for drugs, she would just stay and be used.
Wow.
Yep.
Jody Emerson, so, you know, we've done shows on, you know, on the West Side in the past about, you know, how I-94 is a major corridor, you know, for drugs coming between the Twin Cities, Milwaukee, Chicago, et cetera. Does it also play a pretty large role in human trafficking? I mean, we did a show, I think you were on years ago, and we were talking then about Backpage, which is a website that traffickers used. I believe that's been shut down, but...
It has, yep.
But, so, how big of a role does the interstate play here?
Well, and I think the fact that we call it human trafficking, people assume that you need to be moved around from place to place.
Sure.
And some people do have that happen. But we've also known about people who've been trafficked from their living room to their basement.
Wow.
Sometimes people don't ever move physically anywhere. You know, if you've got the internet in your town, it's very likely you've got human trafficking. That is the highway that we're using more often than not. But when we're on the interstate, it is a little bit more easy to get from place to place. But, you know, that just opens up the question, you know, we don't do away with the highway, though,
right,
because trafficking happens on there. And so as we're looking at how do we reach out to vulnerable people, how do we train our youth to know what's happening, you know, we're not going to just do away with the internet for them. We're not going to do away with cell phones. We just need to teach them how to use them safely. And so we can't make the tools that the traffickers use go away. We can teach people how to use those tools safely so they don't fall victim to it.
Nancy Yarbrough, I mean, one of the tools, Backpage was shut down from what I understand, but are there still other sites that traffickers use and that potential customers or people that want to buy sex use to this day?
Yes, it's really more so that like the Facebook is not used as prominent as we think it is, but it also is the catch where the young ladies are having those pictures exposed to themselves. Mm. We have to remember that the bartering system there is the older generation is buying the younger generation and those two meet on places where they're common, which is actually Facebook. They have Instagram, but they also have Finstagram. It's a fake Instagram that is not detected by anybody except for the person that set it up.
Mm.
We were just talking about so many different ways and avenues, and you're so right about being right inside of your home and trafficking has happened. They have an app that's actually on their phones where the buyer actually sees that person on a cam, the webcam on the phone, and they're doing things in their bedroom to show themselves, or, you know, to not even have sexual encounter, and they're getting paid right there from that part, going right there to their trafficker. So when we talk about all the mainstreams, that media is really playing a huge role in our children being able to think that it is okay. Because when you look on TV and you talk about the things that are sexy, then there are children are emulating what they see. So that bullying fits in and wanting to be part of it. And all you doing is actually enticing more of that behavior and making, again, hidden in plain sight. So there is so many different apps and applications that children are using to make it, you know, easier for them to just stay in the confines of their own home, not even having to leave out. And never, ever, whatever you do, don't not follow your gut feeling, parents, when you have that friend that all of a sudden comes around and you feel that gut feeling about this, something's not right. Follow your instinct, because a lot of young ladies that we work with, that's exactly how it happened. They had a friend they met at school. This friend was already hooked into the life. They start hanging out and going to parties. They wanted to be popular, and all of a sudden they got in further than they could or wanted to because of the deception of what happened. They couldn't go back and tell their parents because now, you know, they did something they were not supposed to. Parents have a close enough relationship with your child where they feel like they can come to you and tell you anything, even if they disobeyed you, you know, so that that doesn't end up happening. Because a lot of that shame and guilt actually happens as well when you're manipulated and pulled in. So I just wanted to bring that up, too, before our time ran short.
Sure.
That vulnerability and the feeling of love and acceptance is there in every human being. And these young ladies, I've worked with over 100 young ladies over the past few years that are in places where there are deemed traffic. And one of the two things they always say is that they wanted to feel loved and accepted. And there are those vulnerabilities, which comes from the people that they hang around, the social media and the things that they watch to say that they are popular and they're part of, you know, the in crowd.
So kind of playing off of that, I mean, how big of a role does, you know, American culture, we're obsessed with sex, and, you know, pornography is so prevalent. And, I mean, is this basically, are these things that groups like yours, Nancy, would like to try to raise awareness about or try to eliminate? I mean, sex in the movies, for example. I mean, there's just all these attitudes towards women that we see, and we seem to be getting away from that slowly, but it's still pretty pervasive. So how do you deal with that in your line of work when that's all around you?
Well, we have what's called the Next Steps group that we go in and we talk with these young ladies about what's going to happen next in your life after you have been deemed trafficked, and they don't really feel like they are trafficked. They feel like it was a boyfriend-girlfriend relationship, so we have to peel back the onion.
Sure.
And we do it on the emotional basis. We teach a class, it's a 10-week course that's evidence-based called Ending the Game. So I'm a trainer for that, and right now I'm actually training the staff and the children that have been involved so they can be on the same level of conversation. If it seems good to the world, well, why would it seem good to you? Ask them, what do you see about that? Having them have the conversation, which always seems to be the biggest thing. My mom never listened to me. My dad doesn't understand. You know, they have feelings. Talk about those feelings. What happened to talking about the sexual desire that happens when you get older? What happened to talking about boyfriend, girlfriend, unhealthy and healthy relationships? What happened to if I got touched inappropriately? Who do I need to tell? And then finding that confidence in that person. What happens when I want to dress in a kind of a way that makes me feel comfortable, but I'm not doing it to make anybody else look at me in a certain way? I like this dress. Mm-hmm. We can't tell young ladies or even young men you can't wear something because you're going to be pinpointed as a prostitute. It's if the confidence that you have when you're wearing it, ask yourself why you're doing it. So it always goes back to the why question that we always ask in our Next Steps group or any other thing that we're doing evidence-based wise dealing with those emotions. We have to find out from that person that actually went through it exactly how much of it they understood, and then start giving them tools that they might not have had in their toolkit of growing up, and take out some of the ones that don't need to be there to give them an opportunity for a fresh start. You know, and that's exactly what's been working for us. We've actually had 97 young ladies, but older young ladies that have been in the life from younger come through our facility, and we've only been open since October 4th for our drop-in location, you know, and that shows the fact that people are looking for a way out. They just don't know where to find it at.
With that, let's go to the phones. I think we're going to be, we're going to try to get through them right now. I'll go to Diane in Chippewa Falls, I believe. Diane, you're on the air.
Yeah, I was just wondering, so a lot of us maybe aren't in workplaces where we're going to face these situations, but we're more likely to encounter them at stores or restaurants or gas stations. And I'm just wondering if there's certain clues we should be looking for or signs that victims might subtly be trying to show us that we need to pay attention to.
Sure, great question. So let me go to Nancy Yarbrough, back to you, and then we'll kind of go round robin.
Well, normally, like I said, when you look at somebody that's in an area where they don't understand where they are, they kind of don't, you know, they look lost. Mm-hmm. They look like they're following step by step with someone. We've always noticed when the guy or the girl is with the trafficker, they don't have a tendency to have eye contact at all. You know, they look lost even in their arena or their area. And again, about the weather conditions, if they're dressed scantily clothed and they look like they're out of place and look like there's fear in their hearts, or they look like they're on drugs and they're super young and they're with this older guy, that's kind of like the red flags that you might look for.
All right. Jody Emerson, anything to add?
No, I think Nancy covered it really well. I would just say sometimes that interaction at a store might not be where you get someone to safety, but simply saying something like, are you okay? Do you need help? Is maybe planting a seed for somebody to help her or him later on too. So sometimes it takes a village.
And Ed Kachikobi.
Yeah. A question that I think is really helpful, and as was said, it's kind of hard to have that in-depth conversation with them, especially if their trafficker is there. So we always say, if possible, get them away from the alleged trafficker if you believe that person might be trafficking them. Mm-hmm. But a question that I say you can ask is even like, where are you sleeping tonight? Because if the person cannot answer that question easily, I think that tells you a lot.
Red flag right there. We do have another caller, but we're not going to be able to get to them. That is our time on today's West Side. Thanks so much to our guests for making this hour possible. Nancy Yarbrough of Fresh Start Learning in Milwaukee, Representative Jody Emerson of the Wisconsin State Assembly, and Kat Jacoby of Fierce Freedom. Thank you very much for the work that you do and for coming on to help educate us on the West Side. Catherine Thomas produced this hour. Mort Cypress was our on-air producer. Publicity for today's show was managed by Kate Spranger and Kaylin Schumacher. I'm Rich Kramer. Tune in next week for another edition of The West Side, when we'll be talking about how Western Wisconsin responds to tragedy. Until then, have a safe and productive week. We'll chat again next Monday morning.